Hey guys, what's going on? This was a slight delay in my normal fashion, you know what I mean? It's pretty much how it goes. And this is pretty much, I'm going to get back in like the groove of it. I had some things to do, you know, life gets in your way sometimes. And when it gets in your way, you try to figure it out what you can do, what you can say, and what would be very apparent to bring to the masses. Now, there's some news articles. This is going to be kind of like a continuation of where I read news articles, give my thoughts. It's not really like XYZ. Some good news, some concerning news with GrapheneOS, but at the same time, not concerning news. And this is something that I think people were a little concerned about. So I guess like a TLDR, we're going to be talking about how Palantir is essentially expanding their surveillance. And the FF has another article on today's Supreme Court decision on age verification. It tramples free speech and undermines privacy. We're going to speak a slight amount about Monero. It's kind of cool. It went pretty much live in the Android ecospace, which is pretty sweet. And I'll go over like what Havno is, why Monero is important, why it's also important to not listen to the FUD that's being spread around in GrapheneOS. And a few other things that might concern people. And I believe this might be old news, but it's not really a problem. This is slightly old. But it is something that I will bring up. If you live in a European country, I would keep an eye on this. And it might change. So a lot of this stuff might change. That would be great, you know, in the long run. And a lot might not. It's pretty insane. So we're going to get into the first of... we're going to get into like the first news story and why it might be important. I'm doing like two things at once. I'm just pulling up all my articles. So Reason, Free Minds and Free Markets or whatever, on their surveillance section, it says Palantir is expanding the surveillance state. If you think the government will only use these tools to track illegal immigrants, think again. This was written on 6/2 of 2025, so this is slightly old. Pretty much when people complain about big tech, they tend to mean the companies like Meta, Google, and X, entities providing free tools and platforms we can choose whether to use. Much less attention is directed at the tech companies, helping the federal government consolidate, analyze data on all of us. Companies like the data analytic firm Palantir, created by PayPal co-founder Donald Trump and Donald Trump supporter Peter Thiel. Palantir has been long connected to government surveillance. It was found in part with CIA money, which is not a good image. It has served as an immigration and custom enforcement contract since 2011. It's been used for everything from local law enforcement to COVID-19 efforts, but the prominence of Palantir tool and federal agency seems to be growing under the present under President Trump. The company has received more than $113 million in federal government spending since Mr. Trump took office. So that's like your tax dollars essentially going towards this company that does do a lot of surveillance technologies and techniques, much like Flock. This is like a side rant, but much like Flock and a lot of these less crime, safer neighborhoods that use these panopticons, are like these very like 1984 George Orwellian era or like Big Ben moment to spy on its citizens, thus, in my opinion, limiting our freedoms. We're eventually going to be left with only thoughts, and eventually, if we go much further, our thoughts will then be probably monitored too. You know, not to virtue signaling or anything, but I do not like the idea of the government using our money to spy on its citizens. This is what Edward Snowden was like very upset about, and why he fled the country and exposed that the NSA was essentially spying on its people. Law enforcement just needs to do their job without violating people's privacy or their rights in general. So, pretty much, according to public records, including additional funds from existing contracts as well as new contracts with the Department of Homeland Security and the Pentagon, reports the New York Times, noting that figures does not include the $795 million contract the Department of Defense awarded the company last week, which has not been spent. It's pretty much enabling a panopticon. A panopticon is, you know, it's not hard to figure out what that is, but it's insane. The ultimate concern is a panopticon of a single federal database with everything that the government knows about every single person in this country. Pretty much, American Civil Liberties Union told a Wired, we are seeing this is likely the first step in creating a centralized doozy on dozier. On everyone in the country, from dream to reality, creating these details portraits of America's based on the government data is not just a pipe dream. The Trump administration has already sought access to hundreds of data points citizens through other government databases, including their bank account numbers and amount of student debt, their medical claims, disability status. Washington already has a ton of data on us, but it's often separated across the system and agencies. By linking it all together, the government could create a much more detailed profile on us, which I agree, this is not a good thing. When you put all your eggs in one basket in the terms of the government, you are then when this creates an attack surface or a threat to other agencies, or like threat actor agencies, you essentially are going to be giving them pretty much the gold mine to attack the federal government as infrastructure. This isn't a crazy idea. I mean, the White House, I think Page got hacked not too long ago. Other systems have been compromised. And if one thing is true, that the government, if not most governments in general, even billion-dollar companies in general, not just the government, they think of security as an afterthought, and their poor handling of it is always constant. Imagine if all of your data, all of your information was just in one spot in the government servers or whatever, wherever the fuck they're holding it, and they're like, and someone's just like, well, I know where I'm going to spend most of my time. And then these nation-state hackers, where they're legally allowed to do this, so it's like, it's not even fucking crazy to think that this is a stupid idea. Pretty much, Washington already has a ton of information on us. No previous, more efficient, probably. They're saying it's supposed to be efficient, but it's not. It's last of it's the last of efficiency. Even some former Palantir employees, object data is the collection for one reason, should not be repurposed for other use. Former Palantir engineer told The Times, combining all that data, even with the noblest of intentions, significantly increases the risk of misuse. No shit. As of now, it's unclear how much merging has actually been done. According to The Times, the Social Security Administration and the Internal Revenue Service are only in talks about using Palantir products. The implication that taxpayer information is being improperly shared across government agencies is not only incorrect and dangerous, but incorrect shared across the Treasury Department told Wired. Yeah, trust me. It's trust me, bro moment. Which is fucking retarded to even think that you would ever trust any government agency not to lie. They've been known to track immigrants, tracking American citizens. Even if surveillance of American citizens are not necessarily the end game, collecting the data of sorters requires these immigration enforcement systems to inevitably track Americans. There's no way that it's not possible to not track everyone with this kind of technology or be abused, which it most likely will. We have no federal protection. We have no federal privacy laws, no federal protections, nothing. And this is why I think siloing your data, essentially this is what the government was doing at the time. In 2025, we're on June 29th right now. So who knows how bad it's going to be, but you're supposed to silo the data, because if half my information gets leaked, okay, yeah, but in reality, I want, none of it, but I'd rather half than all of it. I mean, there is a level of comfort. And the thing is, you are required you cannot lie to, at least in the United States, you can't lie to the government. You can't lie about a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff you cannot lie about. You cannot falsify. You can't false information. So it's not like it's illegal. It's legal or anything to do this to protect your privacy in some form of fashion. So, my thoughts are generally is like we should stop this. We should put a block on it. I don't think they're going to, which is kind of lame, and pretty awful. So if you want, my suggestion is go to your local state representatives and be like, hey, I do not want this kind of technology in my country, or let alone in my state, if you can at least silo it from the other states. There are some people that are, hopefully, there are some cities that are shutting down the idea of even remotely using AI in court systems, which is awesome. They're creating local laws. This is where, having the separation of all these powers in the United States does come in handy to a certain degree, as long as they can fight back against the federal government in general. Vice versa, sometimes like the federal government should be able to step in and stop a state from abusing their citizens. That is generally, that's my opinion. And I'm more or less annoyed that people probably are doing this less frequently, where they're not reaching out to their state local politicians or local representation and telling them, hey, you need to start rejecting this kind of authoritarian reach into my private life, because even though privacy is not a right for citizens, I do think that it should be a right. And that's my thought process on it. But on to the next one. We are going to talk about this. This is an article from the EFF. Today's Supreme Court decision on age verification tramples free speech and undermines privacy. This is by the EFF. This was written and done on June 27th, 2025. I'm going to read a portion of it, because a lot of these articles are long. I've read them, but I'm going to get to the core of it. Today's decision in Free Speech Coalition and Pakistan is a direct blow to the free speech rights of adults. The court ruled no person, adult or child, has the First Amendment right to access speech that is obscene to minors without first submitting proof of age. This ruling allows states to enact outrageous age verification rules that will block adults from accessing lawful speech, curtail their ability to be anonymous, and jeopardize the data security and the privacy. These are real and immersive burdens on adults. The court was wrong to ignore them in upholding the Texas law. Importantly, the court's responding applies to only to age verification rules for containing sexual material, not to age limit in general. We will continue to fight against these age restrictions on online access more broadly, such as on social media and specific online features. Still, this decision has immense consequences for the internet users in Texas and other states that have elected similar laws. The Texas law enforces adults to submit personal information over the internet to access an entire website that holds some amount of sexual material, not just pages of portions of sites that contain specific sexual material, many sites that cannot reasonably implement age verification measures. For this reason, such as cost or technical requirements, will likely block users living in Texas and other states with similar laws. Many users will not be comfortable sharing private information to access sites due to implement age verification. For reasons of privacy or concerns of data breaches, many others do not have a driver's license or photo ID to complete their age verification process. This decision will ultimately deter adult users from speaking and accessing lawful content, and it will endanger the privacies of those who choose to go forward with verification. What the court said today. In the 6-3 decision, the court ruled that Texas HB 1181 is constitutional. This law requires websites that Texas decide composed of one-third or more sexual harmful to minor material, harmful to minors, heavy quotes on that one, to confirm the age of the users by collecting age-verifying personal information from all visitors, even to access the other two-thirds of material that is not adult content. In 1997, the Supreme Court struck down federal online age verification law, Reno versus American Civil Liberties Union. In that case, the court ruled that many elements of the Communications Decency Act violate the First Amendment, including parts of the law that making it a crime for anyone to engage in online speech that is indecent, quote unquote. Patently offensive if the speech could be viewed by a minor, quote unquote. Like HB 1181, the law would have resulted in many users being unable to view constitutionally protected speech, as many websites would have had to implement age verification while others would have been forced to shut down. In subsequent cases, the Supreme Court ruled that laws burden adults' access to lawful speech are subject to the highest level of review under the First Amendment, known as strict scrutiny. This level of scrutiny requires a law to be very narrow, tailored to the least speech restrictive means available to the government. That all changed with the Supreme Court's today. What it means going forward: the Supreme Court broke a fundamental agreement between the internet users and the state that has existed since its inception. The government will not stand in the way of people accessing First Amendment protected material. There is no question that multiple states will now introduce similar laws to Texas. Two dozen already have, though they are not all in effect. At least three of those states have no limits on percentage of material required by law that for the law applies. A sweeping restriction on every site that contains any material that state believes that is the law includes. These laws will force U.S.-based adult websites to implement age verification or block users in the state. Many have in the past when similar laws in effect. Rather than submit verification, researchers have found that people will choose a variety of other paths, using VPNs to indicate that they're outside the state, accessing similar sites that don't comply with the law, often because the site is operating in a different country. While this may users simply not access the content, as a result, others may accept the risk at their own discretion. We expect some states to push the envelope in terms of what content they consider quote-unquote harmful to minors and expand these types of websites that are covered by these laws either through updated language or threats of litigation. Even if these attacks are struck down, operators of sites that involve sexual content of any type may be under threat, especially if the information is politically divisive. We worry that the point of some of these laws will be able to deter queer folks and others from accessing lawful speech, and finding community online by requiring them to identify themselves. We'll continue to fight to protect against these disclosures of these critical information for the people to maintain their anonymity. So, to put this into perspective, the reason I have a problem with this, whether you think porn should be legal, porn should not be legal, whatever, you can have a stupid opinion. But porn is, in my opinion, should be protected under free speech, just like comic books, just like by writing, just by, horny books, whatever you want to look at it. I can write sexually harmful, quote-unquote, harmful material, put it in a book, and then throw it in the adult section and XYZ, blah, 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 or just put it online, you know, whatever. And then they'll have a little pop-up. Are you 18? Yes. Who hasn't in their life lied about their age to access gooning material online? To me, it's not a crime. It is the parents' responsibility to make sure their kids are not doing this. And again, I don't think you going on porn sites is immoral or wrong. I do not care what you do in your spare time. You are a private citizen. I don't care if you're an adult. I don't care if you're 16. It is your choice to go on the internet and try to find this content and, you know, do whatever, do as you wish. It is no one's business but your own. It's no different than you finding your dad's porn stash or your mom's porn stash and reading it and looking at it as a non-adult, etc., etc. The main issue is now when you have these websites that have to put a massive cost and technical implementation into these sites. Now they have to have a way to secure the data. They have to have a way to secure the information. And I guarantee that Pornhub and browsers and all these other big sites, porn sites, aren't going to do that because it's costly. It's expensive. So they'll just block a state, block 16 states. And then, like you said, like the article said, they're just going to use a VPN to get around of it. That's, to me, that's insane. You should be ashamed of your state if they are limiting your access to this sexual, quote-unquote, sexually harmful material. And again, this is their point. If a site, say, has 10% sexual material on it, is that enough? Is that enough to require this? What about 2%? What about 30%? What's 30% of a site? How do you determine 30% of a site is porn? Twitter's going to be fucking annihilated. There's porn all over Twitter. Literally, Twitter has nothing but gooning material on it. It's like 80% porn, probably, and gore material and fucking politics. It's politics, porn, and gore. That's all that's on Twitter. What do you even come to the conclusion that that's okay? And then if these states want to hold this ground that 30% of its content is XYZ porn, then, oh, sorry. And then say you live in these states and you do porn, like you do porn as a content creator. Now you have to go through either extra steps. Maybe it becomes illegal to be a porn star in these states, XYZ. I mean, it really doesn't stop. Like, when is these tyrants going to stop putting their knee deeper and deeper into your fucking throat? You know what I mean? Like, deeper into your fucking neck until it snaps the overreach of authoritarianism just strangling the life out of you. You know what I mean? It's completely retarded to actually think that this is any way productive at all. Your kids have access to the internet. They know what a VPN is. That's what they're going to do. They're going to find it. You know what I mean? And unless you go a nation ban on porn, which would be, to me, fucking insane. Not crazy. Not far off. Probably wouldn't be surprised if that happened. But it's retarded. They're just going to find ways around it. I urge you, again, write to your people. Tell them you don't want this kind of authoritarian reach. People should have access to stuff like this. Because what if the website, again, has very good information on there that is not sexual, and then it just happens to have gooning material on there, and then they ban it? Then some people might make the decision where they don't want to get a VPN. They don't know how to get a VPN. They don't know where to start. And they hand over their information, and then a data breach happens because, again, security is always a second thought. It's not a cost maker. It's a cost... It's not a money maker. It's a cost maker. Like, security never returns money. I think it does in the long term, but, you know, company, I tell that to a CEO, and they're going to disagree with you. So this is insane. Fuck Texas for this one. Actual shithole for that. Just another reason not to live there, I guess. And the other states that follow suit, that follow this brain dead logic, is stupid. Remember, it's always for protecting minors and, quote unquote, protecting the children to infringe on our rights and our privacy. The difference is when I go into, and I guess I just want to make this clear that I want to put something into your head. So when I go to a brick and mortar store and I give them my ID to go buy porn, that person knows I'm 18. I know I'm 18, XYZ. They're like, cool, you're 18. They hand me back my ID. They never remember me. It's not in a database. It's not stored anywhere. They're like, yep, you're 18. Yep, that's you. Go grab your porn. I can pay with cash. Have a nice day. And it's over. There is no record of it there besides the sale. And the sale is just some guy came in. I verified he was 18. He gave me $30. There we go. None. No record. No proof that I bought porn besides the cameras in there to protect the workers or whatever. It's that simple. Just like a bar. I go into a bar. I hand a bouncer my ID. They're like, yep, you're 21. I'm like, thank you. Have a nice day. I go in. I can pay cash with my ex-wife. Like, I can pay cash to the bartender. I drink my legally obtained alcohol, and I go home. Now, what happens before that? Like, your parents generally are like, hey, you probably shouldn't drink. You got to wait till you're 21. It's not good for you. That's what needs to be done. Your parents need to be parents. The internet's not your parents. The internet is not a bouncer. It should never be a bouncer. It should never need any form of identification unless it is legally required under a very specific reason. Like, if you're renewing your driver's license or something that makes sense, if you're applying for a loan, but you can do all this stuff in person. This is requiring me to access, this is requiring my ID to access free speech, in my opinion, and it's requiring me to my ID to access a website and content, which is insane. And again, what is the percentage of that website that is considered adult? It says laws that burden adults to access social material that are obscene to minors are subjected to less searching First Amendment review, which is insane to me. I think that it ought to be a protected First Amendment, and it ought to be the parents' responsibility to have the conversation with their children, not to go watch porn at like an obscenely low age. But then again, I looked at porn at 16. I went on the sites and it was like, oh, yes, I'm 18. Nothing changed. It didn't hurt the website. I didn't get hurt. I don't know. It's people that obsess over this stuff that like obsess over like no jorking, no porn, etc. They're coping and they need a personality because they are massively the most annoying people I've ever met. It's just like my take on that. I don't know. But some Monero news. Havno is an opening Monero to the world. It is a non-custodial, decentralized exchange platform for crypto and fiat currencies built on Tor and Monero. It doesn't get more private. It's very simple. It's built on Monero. It has Tor built into it. It's decentralized in its nature. It's non-custodial. You and only you have control of the keys of your Havno wallet. It's easy to use, and it supports Monero. They have made a great jump. They have made it available on Android. It's in beta. I have tested it. It is based. It is super cool. And I have not bought anything with it yet, but I also have kind of like tested around the app. When I first used it, it did not work. It was like clunky and I had to do a lot of extra steps and it was pretty silly, but it was super awesome. And it allowed me to essentially see how far it's coming in the last like 3 weeks, which is super awesome. Now, I would say proceed with caution. Essentially, what you can do is you go and look for some, you download, it's only supported on Android. Sorry, iPhone users and enjoyers. It's only supported on Android. For right now, there is a possible future of where it will be maybe put on other like Mac devices, but at the current time, no, it's only on Android, which is still based. This is why I'm a base Android user. So essentially download it. take it with a grain of salt. And then what I would do is take a very small amount of money you're okay with losing, maybe $5, maybe $10. Look for the lowest possible amount and then purchase the Monero. Most of the time, you need, I think, some liquidity in there to prevent, but like, how do you get liquidity? So there are people that will abridge, essentially. Like they'll put funds in there so that it can fund the overall network, the wallet, so that you can receive Monero, and then you can take that Monero and, you know, XYZ, like use it. It's pretty awesome. And I would say definitely check it out. Go on the Monero subreddit, talk to people, go to the website, Havno. There's something called RetroSwap. It's a fork of Havno. It's pretty cool as well. It's the same concept. When Havno does an update, RetroSwap pretty much follows suit. It's built on Tor, so it's very, very, very private. Then what I would do is set up your own Monero node. It's really, really simple. Send your Monero to your wallet, and then you are maximizing the maximum amount of privacy you can get with Monero. You know, then take it and spend it, use it as cash, or save it. Whatever you want to do. Maybe in 10 years, Monero will be the next Bitcoin. I don't really care about Monero's price. All I care about is Monero's anonymity and fungibility. That's what I really, really, really care about. Now, it's something that you have to take with a grain of salt. But again, definitely 110% check out Havno and their Android app. I'd recommend it. It's cool. I'm going to eventually take some of my Monero and sell it on there, maybe. I haven't figured it out yet. Or buy some. Because losing local Monero was kind of an L. Now, on to the super fun one. It is going to be about GrapheneOS and the recent drama that is surrounding the ASOCP, which is the Android Open Source Project. On June 21st, they started releasing a various amount of tweets on there, and, you know, toots and whatever Blue Sky fuck calls their shit, that they are running into an increasingly more difficult problem porting to newer versions of Android due to Google locking down and being more restrictive. This is a fear that I have had in the back of my head, and probably them and other people that have used GrapheneOS for quite some time, due to the fact that Google, in their nature, is very restrictive in some of their projects, and they have a overwhelmingly long laundry list of killing products, services, etc. Right now, Google is in a anti-monopoly, antitrust lawsuit, meaning that they are trying to be broken up because they have an overwhelming reach on society and overwhelming reach in the space of tech. Not only do they have the largest search engine, they have the largest, they own Android, which is, I think, if not the largest, it is the largest operating system worldwide. There is no really other option between Android, and then there is Apple iOS, but that again is in their walled garden. And then there is another type of operating system that is ran on these like dumb phones, like very, very minimal base phones. It's called KaiOS or something. This is something that is a problem in the mobile phone operating space because there isn't really a choice. Linux in itself, even though I'm a huge fan, is really not secure by design. There might be some overwhelmingly issues with Linux in general, and Android being based on Linux might be a problem. This is something that GrapheneOS has discussed in great lengths, but due to the fact that Android was built with security in mind and has security practices, and they go into the Android Open Source Project themselves on a technical level and harden it and make it more secure and better overall, is a kind of a large amount of resource that it takes to do that. Now, in the past, Google has been relatively very charitable to companies that do this because in its nature, it is free labor. It is them fixing, finding stuff, reporting it to Google, hardening, and then they're implementing it later. GrapheneOS has implemented a lot of their own technologies in the Android open source project, GrapheneOS itself. The development team has later pushed it and said, hey, this is a good idea, and then it gets adopted into the Android open source project. There's multitudes of them fixing security vulnerabilities, etc. Overall, GrapheneOS has been a net positive to the Android ecosystem. And even then, Apple itself has taken on some of the idea, I'm assuming, from GrapheneOS called Contact Scope. Contact Scope doesn't expose your entire contacts list to the native app, which is, in theory, much more safe, private, and secure. Same thing with Storage Scope. They have automatic Bluetooth turning off, automatic NFC turning off, and automatic Wi-Fi turning off. And then they implement MAC randomization on the Wi-Fi side for each connection. So with private spaces being added much later, just recently, per profile now, you are getting more granular control, and you are also allowing on a per app basis network location disabled, thus increasing your overall security and privacy. This has been a major W, in my opinion, over the course of the last couple of years that I've been using GrapheneOS, and probably has benefited people that doesn't use it on the Android side in general, as long as they're applying the correct patching and updating. With that being said, Google is making it increasingly much more difficult to achieve this, and it is a problem. Many companies, I'm just going to get to their tweets. Many companies and individuals are trying to mislead people about the future of GrapheneOS to promote their insecure products and services. GrapheneOS is not going anywhere. We've made it clear they were shipping Android 16 soon, and the support device will remain supported. June of 2021. Pixels remain the only device providing high level of security, combining with proper secure support using another OS. We hope to have more options by the end of 2026 based on contact with an OEM interested in meeting our requirements, but there is no specific timeline. There In the assumption that future Pixel devices will not be supported due to how Android might be broken up from Google, Google is locking it down and making it more difficult for them to port, and I will read on to that in general. Our very reasonable hardware requirements are a list at GrapheneOS device. We expect industry standards, security patching, features, not anything exotic. Multiple OEMs have indicated they should have no issue meeting these requirements with the next generation Snapdragon system on a chip. That is another part, is picking the correct chip processor that is secure and has security built in mind. In 2017, Pixel 2 added an off-the-shelf element SE with Weaver and insider attack resistance. Weaver provides aggressive throttling to make disk encryption work without a strong passphrase. Insider attack resistance means SE security firmware updates require owner-user unlock. Weaver has key-valued mapping with slots for each profile on the device, where providing the correct authentication token gets back a stored random token, etc., etc. Most Android devices still lack a secure element, providing Weaver a strong box key mint and other standard functionality. Weaver was shipped by the Pixel 2 2017 and Strongbox by the Pixel 3 2018. It's not a high expectation for the device to provide this feature in 2025. This is I agree with it, that they're making these points that a lot of these manufacturers just choose not to. Again, security as an afterthought. So it is an issue. Most Android devices similarly lacked proper privacy and security patching for device firmware from day one and don't provide long-term support. It's not a high expectation. OEMs get 1 month early access and should always ship Android security bulletins, the ASB, in similar patch time. Pixels 8 and later provide 7 years of support. ARM provides standard exploit protection used by firmware software-defined attacks exploitation, pointer authentication code pack, and branch target identification, BTI, are near universal with ARM v9. Memory taggy extension, MTE, is more important and often omitted. Memory tagging is something that you have to, like, really, really, really like kind of dig into it. A device without proper secure and deprived devices. So pretty much, they are going on about that. We use it for known. MTE supports launched with the Pixel 8 when it moved to ARM v9, but the stock OS still doesn't use it by default. In GrapheneOS, we've always used it for the Linux kernel, nearly all based OS process, including apps. We provide a toggle to enable it for all user installed apps. Very simple. Memory tagging and then exploit mitigation. We use it for known compatible user installed apps by default. It's incredibly good at detecting memory corruption, uncovers a lot of bugs. Due to this, we integrated our user-facing crash report system, and per app expectations can be made for user installed apps. They give you a lot of choice, like truly. Our MTE integration is one of the biggest security features we offer. Qualcomm still has an added MTE support, but it's supposed to be available with their 2025 system on a chip, SoC, launch. The Exynos and MediaTek added it for flagship Samsung integrated support as a development feature. Snapdragon provided a solid overall security. It includes basic secure element for our flagships. Our expectation for the Snapdragon will add MTE this year, and OEMs will do their work providing proper secure features and patches can make device meeting our standards by 2026. The most secure non-Pixel device disallowing another OS or don't allow another OS to use imported hardware-based security features, Samsung flagships. They would be the next best option if they didn't do this. Our expectation is we need to work with an OEM so that we're doing that. So they're in the talks with an OEM. If it was up to Samsung, they weren't so like authoritarian with the way they launch the way they handle sideloading a different operating system, not a custom ROM, by the way. This is a misconception and a misrepresentation of what GrapheneOS is. So this is an issue. Pretty much, that is their stance. They're not going anywhere, even though Google is making it very difficult for them to exist. If you have a Pixel right now and you have GrapheneOS, do not listen to these shills or these charlatans that are trying to say GrapheneOS is dead, GrapheneOS is being removed. They are expected going forward to ship the Pixel devices as long as they're supported and maintained with GrapheneOS, meaning the Pixel 10 and maybe future endeavors. Maybe this will be the last time Google makes this big mistake. Maybe Android will get sold off and then put in a position that can be maintained by GrapheneOS, or maybe someone will buy it and maybe something good could come from this, but it's nothing, you know, nothing is guaranteed. This is something that we have to keep in mind. So do not listen to the FUD. Do not listen to the haters. They're still doing updates. I haven't received Android 16 yet. It's supposed to be pushed out in the next 8 to 10 hours, maybe on alpha, or if not, in a couple of days. As I was reading, this is in, yeah, obviously, like I said, 25 June 29th. So maybe by June, maybe by July 1st or 2nd, we could see Android 16 pushed out. Again, they have stressed that it has become much more difficult to do this this time around due to Google being a bunch of fucking bitches. With that being said, we're going to get to the last article. This is by Binance Square, by a person named Neo Phantom. The EU bans Monero and privacy coins. The European Union has officially passed the anti-money laundering regulation, setting the stage for a ban on privacy coins and anonymous crypto accounts starting July 1st, 2027. So you have some time. Under the new rules, financial institutions and crypto asset service provider will no longer be allowed to hold or manage accounts that enable anonymous transactions or support privacy-focused cryptocurrencies like Monero, Zcash, and Dash, which I wouldn't really use those other two. The AMLR also mandates identity verification for crypto transactions above $1,000, aiming to tighten anti-money laundering controls across the crypto space. To oversee these measures, the EU will launch the Anti-Money Laundering Authority, AMLA, directly supporting up to 40 major CASPs across the member states. Supports argued that these rulings will curb the ill activity and improve transparency in the digital finance. However, critics warned that banning privacy coins could undermine the financial privacy rights and restrict the limited use for activists, journalists, and individuals that oppressive regimes. This landmark regulation signals Europe's commitment to a stricter oversight of crypto markets while raising questions about the future of privacy-serving coins. Do you think this ban will go global? I don't think it will. Now, here's the thing. Monero itself is decentralized, so a country can't really ban it. One of the biggest Monero conferences, MoneroCon, is held in Prague, which is in Europe. So that really fucks them. And then, on top of it, a lot of services that I use, except Monero, are in the EU. They're in European countries, or they're in a different country that isn't the US. This becomes a problem. This is going to cause these companies either outright reject Monero and drop it from their books, thus increasing the lack of digital and financial freedom, or B, they are going to shut it off their main site and just go on Tor, which is generally where I use those sites to buy Monero anyways. Most of the sites that I do use are on kyc.notme. kyc.notme. Yep, that's it. And this fundamentally is the easiest way to maintain your privacy and your anonymity when you're buying aka gift cards, or you're buying aka other stuff that you just do not want your credit card or your debit card to know. The transactions are cheap, they're borderline super inexpensive, sometimes causing a couple pennies, and they fundamentally give you back your financial freedom. I think this is a huge L. I do not like the idea of a government stepping in and telling me what I can and cannot buy, as long as it's not harming other people. Obviously, that's a slippery slope. But when you have these companies coming in and saying this is to prevent and to do anti-money laundering, they're going to do it anyways. Monero is not only decentralized in its nature, and you can run your own node, you can't stop people from buying it. You can just go on Tor. You have tools, like I mentioned early, Havno, that is decentralized and peer-to-peer. The only thing you can do is ban apps from the store, wallet apps or whatever, and then all I'm going to do is, because I have Android, I'm going to just go to get their AP or APK and download them anyways, or their GitHub repository. If you're on iPhone, sucks to suck, because it's going to be more difficult if you're in these restrictive environments where they require you to have an account, they require you to get it from XYZ app store, and then you're going to have to find other means of obtaining your Monero. If you want to be mobile, which is kind of like the purpose of it, you're going to have to do some extra funny stuff in order to obtain this. Now, I suggest you, if you're in this position where you want to continue to obtain your Monero, I would buy it now before 2027 in case this law goes into effect. I am not familiar with European law. I'm not a lawyer. And most importantly, I'm not your lawyer. So obviously, I would never tell anyone to do something illegal, but right at if it's the current case right now, it is legal in itself, then you should go buy Monero. I would go get a cheap Android phone if you have a fear that these wallets will be banned and are illegal to obtain, and then I would start sideloading them on your Android device, obtain the Monero so that you can have it now while it's legal, and then take that Monero and send it to your own wallet that runs your own local Monero node, which would increase your privacy and decrease the odds of you being banned, aka better OPSEC. Now, you can check out this thing called Umbrel. Umbrel is a way that you can get a Monero node running. It takes up quite a bit of space, so I would go look into the requirements, buy some of the equipment, and you can run it on a Raspberry Pi. This will allow you to run your own Monero node. You can route everything through Tor, thus increasing your privacy, and you can then signify and settle all your transactions through your Monero node so you can trust that nothing is going to leak and hurt your OPSEC. You can do cold wallets as well. There is a ton of information how to obtain not only Monero anonymously, but much more secure. And I recommend people to not only reach out to their current legislation in the European Union and tell them that this is infringing on their rights to privacy, financial privacy, maybe they could reconsider it, and maybe you can get some people in your parliament that can agree with you. I think sometimes around election season or future election season might scare these politicians into a hole and fear that they might not be reelected because they're doing things that are fundamentally hurting their citizens in the long term. Whether you think Monero or Zcash or Dash is a meme coin or has no store of value, I suggest you go check out all the sites that accept Monero, because in the end, my views on Bitcoin is that it has become exactly what it was going to eventually probably become, a form of central control, too much transparency, meaning that you can't really buy Bitcoin anonymously, and even Lightning is still de-anonymizable. I mean, there are people that have proven this in a vacuum. Monero is one of the few and only private cryptocurrencies that I would probably trust that it is doing its job what it says it's doing. This isn't to be a shill. This is just what I'm looking at from more or less a factual base on how Monero works. And really, the people that have been caught has just been poor OPSEC. And poor OPSEC isn't a Monero issue. It's a you issue. So remember to get your OPSEC up, buy your Monero, and I'll see you guys in the next one.